Welcome to Radioactive Magazine. We will be discussing the Internet Archive, available at archive.org, and Hachette versus Internet Archive, a lawsuit against them. You are not likely to hear much about the Internet Archive in this lawsuit because it threatens the power of the billionaire class and the major media that sustains them. ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, Fox, major newspapers and book publishers all have a conflict of interest in honestly reporting on the Internet Archive and this lawsuit. The Internet Archive has two major services that I use routinely. One is the Wayback Machine, which allows me to search for a broken link and find what that link used to contain. Without that, when something appears from the Internet, it's gone. It's like the people in Orwell's 1984 who are constantly rewriting history. The second is a digital lending library where anyone with an adequate Internet connection can check out books for an hour at a time under controlled digital lending, or CDL. Immediately after the start of the pandemic in 2020, March 24, the Internet Archive created the National Emergency Library, greatly expanding its CDL program, controlled digital lending. 2 months later, on the 1st of June, Hachette Book Group and other publishers filed a lawsuit against them for this National Emergency Library. This lawsuit is now known as Hachette versus the Internet Archive. The plaintiffs argued that the practice of CDL was illegal and not protected by the doctrine of fair use in U.S. copyright law. In response, the Internet Archive closed the National Emergency Library 2 weeks later, but continued their controlled digital lending program. Oral arguments in that suit were heard not quite 3 years later, just this past March 20th, a month ago. We now hear parts of a press conference organized by the Internet Archive shortly before those oral arguments.
Hi, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to today's press event. I'm Chris Freeland, and I'm a librarian at the Internet Archive. We're standing up for the digital rights of all libraries. You're going to hear from Brewster Kahle, the founder and digital librarian of the Internet Archive, Leela Bailey, senior policy counsel at the Internet Archive, Lawrence Lessig, professor of law at Harvard Law School, Heather Joseph, the executive director of Spark, Catherine Styler, the chief executive officer of Creative Commons. We'll hear from author Ashton Applewhite and from author and educator Laura Gibbs. Up first, I'd like to introduce Brewster Kahle, the founder and digital librarian of the Internet Archive, for his opening remarks. Brewster?
Thank you, Chris. The Internet is failing us. The Internet Archive has tried, along with hundreds of libraries, to do something about it. A ruling in this case, ironically, can help all libraries, or can hurt. The Internet Archive is a library I founded 26 years ago. A library has brought hundreds of years of books to the Wikipedia generation, and now four massive publishers are suing to stop us. As the world now looks to their screens for answers, what they find is often not good. People are struggling to figure out what is true, and it is getting harder. Digital learners need access to a library of books, a library at least as deep as the libraries we older people had the privilege to grow up with. The Internet Archive has worked with hundreds of libraries for decades to provide such a library of books, a library where each of those books can be read by one reader at a time. This is what libraries have always done. We also work with libraries that are under threat. We work with many libraries that have closed their doors completely, libraries with unique collections. There are a few of them. Claremont School of Theology, Marygrove College of Detroit, the Cooking School of Johnson and Wales, Denver, Concordia College of Bronxville, New York, the Drug Policy Alliance Library in New York City, and the Evangelical Seminary of Pennsylvania. I've looked these librarians in the eye and told them we were there for them. They entrusted their books to us as a peer library to carry forward their mission. Most of the books are not available from the publishers in digital form and never will be. And as we have seen, students, researchers, and the print disabled continue to use these books for quotations and fact-checking. And I think we can all agree we need to be able to do more fact-checking. Here's what's at stake in this case. Hundreds of libraries contributed millions of books to the Internet Archive for preservation in addition to those books we have purchased. Thousands of donors provided the funds to digitize them. The publishers are now demanding that those millions of digitized books not only be made inaccessible, but be destroyed. This is horrendous. Let me say it again. The publishers are demanding that millions of digitized books be destroyed. And if they succeed in destroying our books or even making many of them inaccessible, there will be a chilling effect on hundreds of libraries that lend digitized books as we do. This could be the burning of the Library of Alexandria moment. Millions of books from our community's libraries gone. The dream of the internet was to democratize access to knowledge. But if the big publishers have their way, excessive corporate control will be the nightmare of the internet. That is what is at stake. Will libraries even own and preserve collections that are digital? Will libraries serve our patrons with books as we have done for millennia? A positive ruling that affirms every library's right to lend the books they own would build a better internet and a better society. Thank you for paying attention to this case.
Thank you, Brewster. Next, I'd like to welcome Leela Bailey, Internet Archive Senior Policy Counsel, to the screen. Leela?
Thanks, Chris. Today, the court will hear arguments about whether copyright law affirms the rights of libraries to lend the books they own to one reader at a time. The benefits of libraries to our modern world cannot be overstated. Libraries are an essential component of our democratic and free society, but the rise of social media and now AI have resulted in an immediate threat to the public's pursuit of the truth. In a vigorous pursuit of the truth, libraries are our greatest ally. The Internet Archive's digital lending program serves this essential purpose and the very purpose of the copyright system, to encourage the intellectual enrichment of the public. Controlled digital lending represents the latest in a long history of innovations developed by libraries to serve the public's need for information. In the past, publishers have stood against such innovations. They stood against microfilm and photocopiers, crying harm. They said they would be harmed by interlibrary loan. They lobbied for decades against libraries being allowed to provide access for the blind and print disabled. They were wrong. It took years, but eventually the law affirmed each of these things and the public benefited. With this lawsuit, publishers have repeated those same claims of massive harm from controlled digital lending. But this case has revealed one thing very clearly after both sides have spent nearly 3 years and millions of dollars looking at the actual market and usage data. There's been no harm. These publishers have shown the loss of not even $1. And even during COVID, when every physical library was closed and the Internet Archive stepped up to provide an emergency library, contrary to the publisher's dire predictions, there was simply no effect on their market, not $1 of harm. When asked under oath, their executives even admit this. For example, Allison Lazarus, executive vice president and director of group sales for Hachette, admitted that their theory of harm is only, quote, speculative. Another executive, Skip Dye, SVP of Library Sales and Digital Strategy at Penguin Random House, candidly admitted that when it comes to market harm, quote, I don't have any evidence. Another agreed, stating, there's no factual analysis. It's just one inference one could make. That was Chantal Restivo-Alessi, Chief Digital Officer of HarperCollins. Tellingly, the publishers instructed their own $950 an hour expert to not even try to measure economic harm. In fact, they didn't give him any data to measure. And when asked under oath whether any potential sales were lost, he responded, I don't have empirical evidence of that. On the other hand, when we invited economists from Northeastern University and the University of Copenhagen to look at the sales and library lending data that has been produced in this case, they came to a singular conclusion. The Internet Archive's digital lending had no measurable effect on the market whatsoever. Never in the history of the United States have libraries needed to obtain special permission or to pay license fees to lend the books they already own. Sure, publishers would profit from the ability to demand such fees, but the law does not give them that right. We look forward to the court reaffirming the essential role of library lending now in our digital world. Thank you. Back to you, Chris.
Thank you, Lila. Up next, we have a pre-recorded statement from Lawrence Lessig, professor of law at Harvard Law School.
This is Larry Lessig. We should all recognize and celebrate the importance of commercial publishing for authors and for creators everywhere. Commercial publishing creates the income that authors depend upon to have the freedom to create great new works. Without commercial publishing, much of the greatest that will be just won't be written. But we must also recognize that culture needs more than commercial publishing. If the business model of commercial publishing controlled our access to our past, then much of who we were and much of how we learned to be better would simply disappear. Think about the extraordinary platform that is Netflix. For a small price each month, subscribers have access to thousands of movies and television shows, far more than at any point in human history. The revenue subscribers provide, in turn, lets Netflix invest in new creative work. No one who knew television in the 1970s could believe that the quality of television has not improved dramatically over the last 50 years. Yet Netflix's archive is not endless, and each year the site calls titles from its collection and removes them from its library. Netflix does this for many reasons. For example, the content could be licensed from third parties and the term of that license has expired. Or the site might see that demand for the title is so meager that bearing the costs of it no longer makes economic sense. Regardless of the reason, the decision is an economic one for Netflix. Netflix makes available only those titles that it continues to make economic sense to make available. Such is the business model of a commercial publisher. But culture needs a different business model. We need access to our past, not just the part of our past that continues to be economically or commercially viable. We need libraries that assure that we can see everything our parents or grandparents saw so we can understand why they were as they were and how they got better. Great libraries preserve access to as much as they physically can, not based on which titles continue to earn revenue. The past is just one more competitor for a commercial publisher. But for a library, the past is a gift that is to be nurtured and protected regardless of its commercial value. We are at a critical moment in the history of culture. The lawsuit that the Internet Archive faces will determine whether the business model of culture is the commercial model alone, or whether there will continue to be a place for libraries, and therefore continue to be a practice of assuring as much access to our past as is possible. The particular fight in this lawsuit is important, but the general fight is critical. Is the past that we have access to just the past that continues to pay? Or is the past that we can have reliable access to the past that libraries strive to make available, not for profit, but for the love of culture and for the truth that that access to all of culture continues to assure?
Next, we'll hear from Heather Joseph, the executive director of Spark. Heather?
Thanks, Chris. I'm Heather Joseph, the executive director of Spark, which is a membership organization of several hundred libraries here in the United States. And I'm going to build on the theme that Larry just brought to the table, which is the importance of the role that libraries play in access to our past, to our present, to knowledge. Because access to knowledge is a fundamental human right. We depend on being able to freely share knowledge, each and every day. It's foundational to how we navigate the world, from how we learn to how we work, to how we share our culture and how we understand our collective history. It's also the lifeblood of how we advance discovery and go after attacking the biggest challenges that we face as a society. We take for granted that that knowledge is just there and that anyone can access it when and if they need it. But the reality is that too often, this just isn't the case. Particularly in the world of scientific research, knowledge has become commoditized. And it's become a commodity that way too often carries a price tag that makes it totally unaffordable to all but the wealthiest individuals and institutions. And we see this, you know, never more than in the time of crises. From the avian flu to the COVID-19 pandemic, we see the same pattern play out over and over again. When we have a public health crisis looming, one of the very first things that happens is that scientists, the public, and policymakers really scramble and end up having to plead with publishers to lower paywalls to make sure that those who desperately need access to knowledge can get it. Sharing knowledge is a fundamental human right. Nothing could be more important to protect than that.
Thank you, Heather. And now we have a pre-recorded statement from Catherine Styler, the Chief Executive Officer of Creative Commons.
My name is Catherine Styler, and I'm the CEO of Creative Commons. As a nonprofit dedicated to supporting the sharing and reuse of creativity and knowledge, we strongly support the Internet Archive in its defence of controlled digital lending. Free, equitable, and open access to all knowledge stimulates creativity, is essential for research and learning, and constitutes a bedrock principle of free and democratic societies. The Internet Archive is leading the fight for establishing permanent access to historical collections that exist in digital format. With controlled digital lending, libraries like the Internet Archive can lend one copy of digitized material from their collection to one borrower for a limited time, just like they would a physical book. While publishers argue that CDL decreases their profits, studies show that in fact library digitization increases sales of physical editions by about 34% and increases the likelihood of any sale by 92%, particularly for less popular or out-of-print works. At Creative Commons, we believe copyright should encourage controlled digital lending and ensure that legal mechanisms are in place to support this practice that benefits all. This isn't a position that we just came to on our own. Instead, it came from working in hand-in-hand with cultural and knowledge institutions across the world. Like Communia's policy recommendation state, libraries should be enabled to fulfil their mission in the digital environment. As libraries modernise their services, we need to protect their legal frameworks that support their lending practices. Permitting and protecting controlled digital lending is a key way to help ensure copyright is fit for the modern age. Guided by our strong belief in better sharing, Creative Commons will continue to support the Internet Archive's crucial efforts to ensure the public can access knowledge and culture on a global level.
Shifting gears, there are more than 1,000 authors who have signed a petition opposing the publisher's lawsuit. One of those authors, Ashton Applewhite, has sent a pre-recorded statement that will play now.
My name is Ashton Applewhite, and I'm recording this in New York City on March 16th, 2023. For over 40 years, I have supported myself and my family by writing books for Random House, HarperCollins, Macmillan, and other major publishing houses. These publishers have served me well, but I am completely opposed to their lawsuit against the Internet Archive. It will have a chilling effect on the efforts of all libraries to adapt as print culture migrates online. And it will also devastate the Internet Archive, which, as we hurtle into this digital unknown, is the single most important repository of human knowledge. No other organization is preserving and providing online access at this scale. The Wayback Machine alone has archived 800 billion pages, millions of books, tens of thousands of hours of TV and radio news, and on and on. Humanity's collective history digitized. Thank heavens the Internet Archive exists. We need to be able to say that 100 years from now.
And finally, for the perspective of an author and educator, I'd like to welcome Laura Gibbs to the screen to explain how the Internet Archive's lending library helps fuel her passion for folklore. Laura?
Thank you, Chris. For many years, I taught mythology and folklore courses at the University of Oklahoma. Since I retired 2 years ago, I've been doing bibliography work at the Internet Archive, looking for the best mythology and folklore books that readers can borrow from the archive's library with controlled digital lending. Last year, I published A Reader's Guide to African Folktales at the Internet Archive, which is an annotated bibliography of 200 books available at the archive. Beautiful books of folktales, myths, fables, legends, games, songs, riddles, and proverbs from all over the African continent. Some of the books come from African publishers and are hard to find in any library, but there they are, digitized and ready to read at the Internet Archive. This year, I'll be publishing a follow-up volume, A Reader's Guide to African Diaspora Folktales, with another 200 books of folktales, this time from African American and Caribbean storytellers. Books that teachers, students, scholars, parents, people all over the world can read online at the archive. In the year 2023, we should not have to be limited just to the books available to us in our local libraries. We need a positive ruling in this case so that the Internet Archive can keep on building their digital library and so that other libraries can also make their resources available online, connecting more people with more books than ever before. The readers, writers, and researchers of the world need the Internet Archive, and we need controlled digital lending.
You have just heard a press conference organized by the Internet Archive right before oral arguments in Hatchett versus the Internet Archive. 4 days later, March 24th, the judge issued a ruling granting a summary judgment in favor of the publishers, the plaintiffs in this suit, and against Internet Archive. The two parties were required to submit proposals, or preferably a joint proposal, for the appropriate structure to determine the judgment to be entered in this case. The submission or submissions should be made, the judge said, within 14 days of the date of this opinion and order, which turns out to be April 7th. The two parties have twice requested and obtained extensions. The current one expires tomorrow. Anyone with an internet connection can follow this or any other case in U.S. federal courts via the federal government's PACER system or via courtlistener.com maintained by the Free Law Project. Documents in U.S. federal courts are in the public domain. However, if you get them via PACER, you must pay for them. If one person buys, by contrast, if one person buys a copy from PACER via courtlistener.com, that copy is saved by CourtListener and then offered free to anyone else. For this case, I went to courtlistener.com, then clicked Recap Archive and searched for Hatchett versus Internet Archive. This identified 41 cases and 751 docket entries. The first of those cases was Hatchett Book Group versus Internet Archive. That's the case I want. After clicking on that, I saw that the first document was number one, filed in 2020, June the 1st. The header line for that table of documents has a descending button on the right. I clicked on that to reverse the order so that the most recent document displayed first. Earlier today, that most recent document was the order on motion for extension of time filed April 13th, mentioned above. More on how to do this, including links, is available in the description of this episode of Radioactive Magazine at kkfi.org. Click News and Public Affairs, then Radioactive Magazine, then the Internet Archive and Lawsuit. The legal basis for Hatchett and other book publishers to sue the Internet Archive is U.S. copyright law. That is authorized under the Copyright Clause of the U.S. Constitution, which says that the United States Congress shall have the power to promote the progress of science and useful arts, by securing for limited times to authors and inventors the exclusive right to their respective writings and discoveries. To be precise, this suit was officially limited to only 127 books named in that lawsuit. However, comments we've just heard from in this press conference clearly indicate that the speakers believed that this suit threatens all controlled digital lending by many libraries, not just the Internet Archive. During the press conference, Leela Bailey mentioned expert testimony by economists from Northeastern and the University of Copenhagen. By searching for Northeastern at that website, I found a document by Imke Reimers, an associate professor of economics at Northeastern. Reimers found no statistically significant impact on the sales of books during the operation of the National Emergency Library, the official issue in this suit. She also said a large proportion of book sales for both print and e-books occurs in the first few years after a title's publication. In addition to the 127 books named in the lawsuit, for the 127 books named in that lawsuit, quote, sales in the first 5 years after an edition's publication account for up to 90% of lifetime sales. That says to me that if the copyright period were only 5 years rather than 75 years, it would reduce their total sales by only 10%. This says to me further that science and the useful arts would progress much faster if the copyright period were reduced to only 5 years. In my own work, I use the Internet Archive routinely. I will continue to follow further developments in this suit via courtlistener.com, plus the Wikipedia article on this case, Hatchett versus the Internet Archive, and other sources. In closing, we have been discussing the Internet Archive and the lawsuit of Hatchett versus Internet Archive. More on Internet Archive and this lawsuit, including links to other resources, are available in the description of this episode of Radioactive Magazine at kkfi.org. Click News and Public Affairs, then Radioactive Magazine, then Internet Archive and Lawsuit. Tune in next week when we will be talking with members of a local Kansas City chapter of Common Defense, which claims to be the largest grassroots membership organization of veterans, progressive veterans, standing up for their communities against the rising tide of racism, hate, and violence. I'm Spencer Graves. Craig LeBeau is at the controls. Thank you for listening. Yes, and I want to say one more thing. This Saturday, April 29th, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., there will be a career day at Lucille Bluford Library, 3050 Prospect, Kansas City, Missouri, organized by the Oracle Center for Social and Cultural Activities in Kansas City. KKFI's board president, Katina Taylor, is one of six people scheduled to speak at this event.